Curious City is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books. Attend public events and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is Curious City.
Do you know where you're going to? Do you like the things that life has shown?
It is award season, and the nominees for the Academy Awards are out today.
Do you know?
While none of the Best Picture nominees were filmed in Chicago, the city has an undeniable allure on screen.
Chicago was one of the first cities I knew about because of movies. And I think it's because it has the subway, it has the suburbs, it has so many buildings.
Film critic Mariah E. Gates says that, plus the city's signature architecture, the unique character of each neighborhood, the grid system that lends itself to good compositions, all of it makes for some award-winning films. Last episode, we attempted to name the best movie shot in Chicago. But with so many greats, it was impossible to pick a definitive best.
Top five things I miss about Laura. One, sense of humor. Very dry, but it can also be warm and forgiving.
Let alone name all the movies that deserve recognition. So today, we're gonna dig even deeper into the movie vault with Mariah and her partner, assistant editor of RogerEbert.com, Robert Daniels. Curious City editor Susie Ahn sat down with the couple. They first talked about the most common tropes you'll find in Chicago films, crime and corruption. Yep, this is how Hollywood portrayed Chicago from the start.
As a reporter who follows a dangerous trail through the dark byways of the city.
In classic film noirs like Chicago Deadline.
I don't know her. I never heard of her. Let me alone.
Or Call Northside 777 starring Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, there are a lot of Chicago noirs, what, the 1940s? Because, you know, Chicago, hotbed of crime. It's the, you know, gritty red light city. And so probably not the best representation of the city, but Chicago appears a lot. And there's Chicago references in just about every film. There's always someone who's like, oh, yeah, their cousin just moved from Chicago, or this person just came from Chicago. You shouldn't trust them.
She used to run around with a guy that works in the stockyards.
So don't let your enthusiasm get you into trouble. Back of the stockyard's a tough neighborhood.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't scare me, Kelly.
Can you speak Polish?
No, I can't speak Polish. But if I have to learn to speak Polish to find her, I'm starting right now.
Yeah, I do think the noir era set up what people think of Chicago as like a crime city. You know, and that goes back to the Prohibition and Capone and the Untouchables and all of that, yeah.
When it comes to corruption, Curious City listeners repeatedly pointed us to the 1969 film, Medium Cool.
Don't struggle with him, just hold hands.
Mariah calls it one of the great political Chicago movies.
Part of it was shot during the 68 DNC, and so there's footage on the ground. There's like cops beating people that's like really is happening. And I can see why you wouldn't want too many movies to show that side of Chicago. Medium Cool rips, though. It's a great film. You have that, you have The Untouchables, which is kind of a mixture of both the corruption and not corruption.
When you get Capone, here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Yeah, I can see why they wouldn't want to show too much of that. But even The Untouchables, that was filmed in the 80s, you know, during that boom.
The Untouchables came out in 1987, and Sean Connery picked up an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. Another 80s classic that Curious City listeners raved about was the 1981 film, Thief.
You know, when you have trouble with the cops,
You pay them off like everybody else because that's the way things are done. But not you, huh?
No. Yeah. They don't run me and you don't run me.
Greatest use of the green mill outside of Prelude to a Kiss. No, I'm kidding. They're both really good uses of the green mill. Thief I love because I love James Caan. But also I think Michael Mann really sees the beauty of the city at night and really did a great job of highlighting not just the architecture but the use of neon in this city. This is such a neon-lit city, and he really, really shows that.
Well, there's also just Chicago as a city that is a big city, but also, like, you know, it's the biggest small town. And in the 80s and the 90s, you had a lot of films set in the middle of the country and in rural America. And Chicago, of course, isn't rural, but, like, a lot of the transplants that come to Chicago very much are. And so I think it was always a nice kind of middle ground, you know, space to kind of find these approachable stories.
From the approachable to the nearly impossible with a little movie magic. Chicago is perfect for fun romps and chases around the city. The most famous one? The Blues Brothers.
Jake, I gotta pull over.
It's another beautiful car chase through the city. That's fun.
Use of unnecessary violence in the apprehension of the Blues Brothers has been approved.
Something else the Blues Brothers did was introduce viewers to another side of Chicago.
I didn't know that Chicago really has a lot of country music fans here. And because I'd seen, you know, the Blues Brothers and they played the country western bar and everything. But I moved here and there's like multiple country stations, radio stations. So I think that's an interesting tidbit about Chicago that feels dated, but is actually still true to the makeup of this city, where country western music is still quite popular here.
It's also a film about a specific moment in Chicago history, and it shows a lot of things that don't exist in the city anymore, like Maxwell Street. My dad, you know, was born in Mississippi, but he moved here when he was about 14. And he moved here when Maxwell Street was still Maxwell Street. And every single time we'd watch the Blues Brothers, he would always lament that he couldn't get a nice Vienna hot dog on Maxwell Street.
Ho, 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 ho.
And of course, on Maxwell Street scene where you have John Lee Hooker playing Boom Boom Boom, and you get the blues element, the blues heritage of the city as well, intermixing with that kind of black southern element that I don't think is shown enough in Chicago movies, but it gets a spotlight in Blues Brothers.
But again, let's not forget that car chase.
Well, this is definitely Lower Wacker Drive, if my estimations are correct. We should be very close to the Honorable Richard J. Daley Plaza.
That's where they got that Picasso.
Yep.
That car chase is not remotely geographically accurate.
No, car chases, a good car chase should never be remotely accurate.
Like, it is not accurate at all. It's like one of the least accurate scenes set in Chicago next to Harrison Ford in The Fugitive when he, like, goes to downtown and tries to confront the guy who killed his wife at the ballroom. Like,
yeah.
The way that he gets there is just not possible.
Pay no mind to the inaccurate Chicago geography. Curious City listeners seem to love The Fugitive the most.
You almost got away with it, didn't you?
I can prove it.
So many people wrote in about Harrison Ford, who was born in Chicago, and Tommy Lee Jones' hot pursuit around the city.
I mean, it is definitely one of the most entertaining and surprising Best Picture nominees. Like, when I used to watch that movie all the time just because my mom loves Harrison Ford, and then I discovered it was an Academy Award, like, nominated film. Tommy Lee Jones won an Oscar. I'm like, what? But it's like, those are the kind of great studio programmers that Hollywood used to make, and they would set them all over the place. Now they're almost all in New York and they're all not great. And this movie is good. It's in the middle of the country. Tommy Lee Jones just plays a guy.
I didn't kill my wife. I don't care.
It's iconic line delivery. Harrison Ford is so charming. And then, like Robert said, even though the geography is not correct, he goes all over the city. You get to see everything. And it's just a movie you can rewatch over and over. Even though you know how it's going to end, you're still so nervous. You're like, is he going to get out of this? I don't know.
That movie also has, I think, one of the best inside jokes about Chicago.
If they can dye this river green today, why can't they dye it blue the other 364 days of the year?
Biggs, do I know?
Which is now kind of like dated in a way because the river is significantly cleaner than it was like in the 90s.
That scene was filmed during the real St. Patrick's Day parade downtown. You can even catch a quick glimpse of then Illinois Attorney General Roland Burris. From running away from the police to evading capture by your high school principal, what would a conversation about Chicago movies be without Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Is there a problem?
You're Abe Froman.
That's right. I'm Abe Froman.
The sausage king of Chicago.
Yeah, that's me.
Like, I think most people who grew up here was like the quintessential Chicago movie. Like, it's like kind of everything you have to do in Chicago in a single day is in that movie. I actually don't even know if you could do all of it in a single day. There's so many kind of like iconic moments. Like, my day job is I manage tours at Wrigley Field, and one of the main questions we get is, tell me where Ferris Bueller sat. and you know, we give a vague estimation of, like, yeah, somewhere in the, you know, left field corner. And there's also the great parade twist and shout scene, and I remember, like, having to tell my out-of-town college friends, like, that's not how parades are here. I'm sorry. I wish that's how they were, but that's not how it is. But also, you get, a great sense, I mean, at least in that scene, of the city downtown, right? Because you have, like, the construction workers. Then you also have, like, the German dancers in there, which gives, like, the German heritage of the city. And then there's the Irish component in there, too. So it's actually, like, a really interesting showing of the melting pot of the city. And, of course, the Art Institute scene.
Yeah, the Art Institute scene is truly one of the best museum scenes, I think, in any movie. And shows how beautiful the permanent collection is at that museum. You can still go and look at that Monet painting.
Senior Skip Day on screen is a fun premise. But Mariah and Robert note another Chicago teenage romp that doesn't quite have the happy ending that Ferris Bueller gets. It's the classic from 1975, Cooley High.
It's a mixture of sort of the kind of hangout high school movies that you see a lot of white versions of, where the guys are just being dumb. And then it adds that layer of, like, what it's like to be black in a city just vaguely post the civil rights era, vaguely post Black Panther, where it's still, you have a little bit more freedom, but do you? And that movie does a really good job of showing, like, why can't they have a regular, silly kids having fun high school movie? Like, that opening sequence is just so, they're running, it's just so vibrant. And then you're like, oh, man. And so it layers in that social commentary really well, in that as a white viewer, you're like, oh, this is not fair. This, you know, because, like, it could have just been Ferris Bueller, but it couldn't, and it never could, but it should.
Well, y'all don't look like no cops to me.
That's why they hired us, baby. Because we don't look like cops.
Okay, up against this wall here.
Yeah, and it's a blaxploitation film, and the city actually has a very rich history of blaxploitation movies, because many of them actually world premiered in Chicago. And so it stands as a great chapter into the blaxploitation genre. It's also a film directed by a black man, which was, you had, by that point, race films had ended and the blaxploitation era had given black directors a chance to go behind the camera again. And so having a black director who was able to make a film specifically about Chicago, but also make it specifically about black coming of age, it's incredibly rare. And it still stands, I think, as maybe the great black coming of age film ever made. don't think there's a single director, black director I've ever interviewed who hasn't at some point mentioned, oh yeah, Cooley High was a massive influence for me. Like I just talked to Reginald Hundlin, who directed House Party, who's originally from East St. Louis, Illinois, and he talked about, you know, Chicago being like the big dazzling city, and that he would always watch Cooley High and how much Cooley High influenced House Party.
Can I say? I ought to kick your ass.
Hey, if you think you're so big and bad, why don't you pick on somebody your own size?
I'll kick your ass too, you and what I.
Some Chicago movies are award-winning, but others are truly timeless. So what Chicago movie has the longest legs?
Batter up, hear that call.
Robert and Mariah think it could be A League of Their Own. It filmed in a bunch of locations in the Midwest, including Wrigley Field.
Everybody loves that movie. You don't even have to like baseball to love that movie. Penny Marshall just directed the heck out of that movie, and she has such a great, she was an actress, so she has a really great knack of working with actors, but also she had a really great way of casting people whose chemistry worked off each other. Like, she had Madonna, and Madonna doesn't outshine anybody. She works Madonna into the cast. Tom Hanks doesn't really outshine anybody, but the rat-a-tat with Gina Davis is there. Then you have the sister rivalry that's also, you know, filled with so much love and compassion. It's just, I don't know.
Okay. Go, Rangers!
Robert would say baseball is a metaphor for American society, so perhaps he's correct because that movie does speak to everybody.
Yeah, it's a film that is about, of course, about baseball, and baseball has such a timelessness. It just kind of like transcends generations.
Something important has just happened. I was in the toilet reading my contract, and it turns out I get a bonus when we get to the World Series. So let's play hard. Let's play smart. Use your head.
I said lump 3 feet above our ass, right, Jimmy?
Okay, sure. Baseball is timeless, but so is Christmas.
No way. This is Christmas, the season of perpetual hope.
If there is a Chicago movie with the most staying power, it might be Home Alone.
That Home Alone house is a literal landmark. People are visiting and they're like, I need to see the Home Alone house.
So people see it every year, like a new generation sees it every single year. So it might probably end up, of all the Chicago movies, end up forever having the longest legs because of that component, because it's attached to a holiday. And so there's always an opportunity for parents to show their children and grandparents and what have you.
Not to mention, it's fun comparing O'Hare Airport then and now.
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind.
And how that terminal actually hasn't changed all that much.
Run, run, Rudolph. Randolph ain't too far behind.
Home Alone, A League of Their Own, The Fugitive. These are movies that most Chicagoans have probably seen. But are there some that have flown under your radar? Mariah and Robert say there are a couple of hidden gems that are definitely worth checking out. Mariah's pick is the 1999 independent film Compensation.
It's a film that's about the Great Migration on one half of it, but also about being black in the 90s on the other half. It has a deaf co-lead. It's an experimental film, but it's also a romance, but it's also historical. It's got like so many different things. It's filmed all over the city. It's filmed at the beach. It's filmed on the CTA. It's all filmed all over the city, and I think is a really essential part of Chicago history. And then it kind of got abandoned, even though I believe Roger Ebert championed it. But it just sort of, it was unsellable, unmarketable, too experimental.
I can't read, miss.
Last year, Compensation was re-released with updated sound and captions, giving it something of a second wind.
Now it's on home video and streaming, and it's just a movie that should be rediscovered. And I mean, it's done so well now that I don't think it was unmarketable. I think people were just afraid to market it.
For Robert, it's a more recent release, 2023's We Grown Now.
And Cabrini Green.
There's only one rule on the playground.
From director Minhal Baig.
It's set in Cabrini Green. It's a coming of age story between these two young black kids. One whose mother is like trying to get a job in order to leave the city and leave Cabrini Green and go and have a better life for her son. And so the film really is about kind of like a community and what Cabrini Green was at the time and all its warts and complexities, but also about like, you know, right now it's been written about often there's an exodus of black residents from Chicago. And that film, I think, really thinks about that question, except from the perspective of the 90s, and makes that the heart of it, of what does it mean to kind of leave your home and say, it's just not working here. It's just not working in this city. And I think that is right now very representative of a lot of black folks living in Chicago. And so I think it's a heartwarming film and a touching film. And even though I made it sound incredibly dour.
it joyfully subverts some of the Ferris Bueller moments through the lens of Cooley High. So these two kids at one point do leave their school and they do go to the art museum and they do ride the CTA and they do it joyfully. And I think she very clearly is taking both of those films through a lens of the 90s and what she would have wanted to see and what these kids should have gotten to do and what kids do get to do. So like it's dour, but it's also filled with a lot of joy because children are for the most part naturally joyful humans. The movie really celebrates that aspect of their childhood friendship and how playful you can be in Chicago if you have a CTA card.
Thank you to Mariah E. Gates, film critic and author of Cinema Her Way, and Robert Daniels, associate editor of RogerEbert.com, for guiding us through the mounds of Chicago movies. Yet again, we have come to the end of another episode and we still didn't get to dig into all the movies that you, our listeners, submitted. High Fidelity, Adventures in Babysitting, Love Jones, Risky Business, Running Scared, Mahogany, Stony Island, Stranger Than Fiction, The Fury, Soul Food, Backdraft, About Last Night, Candyman, Hoop Dreams, The Big Sick, The Negotiator, My Best Friend's Wedding, Next of Kin.
Starring Patrick Swayze and Liam Neeson. Now, I will preface this by saying, I actually like this movie. But is it good? I don't know.
Well, you can find out for yourself. It is winter for another 100 months in Chicago. Stay inside. Have a Chicago movie marathon. This episode of Curious City was produced by Justin Bull and Susie Ahn. Curious City is a production of WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. If you have questions about Chicago and the region, send them our way at curiouscity@wbez.org or visit us at wbez.org/curiouscity. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.